Hello, this is Dave Melton. You're listening to Underwood and Flinch Underground, episode 36.
Thanks, Dave.
Hello, chums. Me here, back from my last-minute and completely unplanned-for vacation with a regrettably short episode of Underwood and Flinch Underground. That is, in part, down to my holiday, but also because I had to cut it short, the episode, that is, as a result of a revelation that I had on my holiday. The kind of revelation that can only happen when you're on holiday with nothing to do but lie on your back, staring at the blue sky and thinking for hours on end about the future plot developments of Underwood and Flinch. The end result was that the scene that follows the scene that makes up this episode had to be cut because my revelation meant that things in it had to be changed, and by that I mean that it has to be completely rewritten. So it's a good thing I didn't podcast it already, because if I had done, I would now have to delete the episode and try to convince all of you that you'd never heard it. Everything in it never actually happened. That wouldn't be good, would it? Far better to just get it right first time. You know, to be honest, I have been suffering a bit lately with writer's block when it comes to Underground. Not because I don't know where the story's going. I do. But it's more to do with the stuff that happens after Underground, in the next Underwood and Flinch book. And it was about that book that I had my revelation. I was finally able to see the things that had been lurking just under the surface of my imagination, things that now have, happily, caused the whole overarching plot of Underground and the other remaining book of the Underwood and Flinch saga to come together. And hey presto, my writer's block was automatically lifted. So, that's the good news. But the bad news is, as I mentioned a moment ago, this episode is consequently a bit shorter than I, and no doubt you, would like. But hey, half a loaf is better than none, isn't it? And I know a lot of you have been jonesing for a loaf, a half a loaf, or even a slice of the Underwood and Flinch loaf, to take the edge off, as they say. So, here it is. My next episode will, rest assured, be up to normal size and with you a heck of a lot faster than this one has been. Sorry about the wait, but as I say, I was blocked on this story, which is one of the reasons, incidentally, why I wrote Yule Among the Sleepless. But anyway, shut up, Mike, and get the flip on with it, says you. And so I shall. But first, a quick flashback so we know where we are. Let's rewind. In episode 27, we saw David chase Damo into Hoban Station, and unknowingly, he was pursued by Whitmore of the OCU, who was in turn, unknowingly, pursued by Glover of the Sect. One guy who saw all of this was Ronnie Bishop, the journalist that David met in the pub on the opposite side of the street to Hoban Station. You may remember they'd had a little quid pro quo chat about the London vampire case, what David knew, what Ronnie knew, and so on, before David spotted Damo on the other side of the street and ran off after him. You may also recall that Whitmore, the OCU cop who chased David into the station, had a partner, one Phil Sloan, who stayed behind to keep an eye on Ronnie and call in to the OCU to report what was happening. Well, that is where we are now. Back there, Damo, David, Whitmore and Glover have just run into Hoban. Ronnie has his camera out and Sloan is ending a call on his mobile as you and I re-enter. Underwood and Flinch, Underground. A novel written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Episode 36. Ronnie Bishop watched the four men chase into Hoban Station through the viewfinder of his pocket digital camera, snapping pictures as quickly as the mechanism would let him. When the last of the four had disappeared into the station, he'd taken five pictures. At least one of them would be good enough to attach to the newspaper story that was already taking shape in his mind. But there was no time to view them now. The story was still happening, and he had to get after it. He pocketed the camera and hurried down to the pedestrian crossing outside the station. He didn't notice the man following him, nor indeed had he noticed him all day. Detective Constable Phil Sloan of the OCU, whose partner, Jeff Whitmore, was one of the men Ronnie had just photographed running into the station, now stepped discreetly into line a few pedestrians behind Ronnie, his eyes flicking between the journalist, the station entrance, and the status of the traffic lights. Sloan had just got off the phone to Guy Valentine, recounting to him as briefly as he could how Bishop had met with a man called Dave, with whom he'd had a conversation that mentioned both Coleridge and the Malleus, before Dave had suddenly broken off to go in pursuit of a fleeing man he'd addressed only as Damo. Not wanting to lose this new lead, Whitmore had gone in pursuit of Dave and Damo, leaving Sloan alone to maintain surveillance of Bishop. Valentine had told him to stay on Bishop and to keep him updated. Sloan was keeping his phone in his hand, for as the lights changed and Bishop set off straight for the station entrance, he had a feeling he'd be needing it again very soon. Ronnie knew that whoever Dave was, whoever this Damo was that he was chasing, and whoever the men were that were chasing them, they were heading for some kind of ruckus, and when it happened, he meant to be there. He entered the station. Amid the swarming people inside, he looked for signs of chaos, for indicators that might point to which way the men had gone. Beyond the ticket barrier, he could hear shouts. Three transport police officers were running in the direction of the escalators. As Ronnie waited impatiently in line to pass through the ticket barrier, he listened to snatches of chatter from the staff.
"Nutjob got up between the escalators and tried to slide down it. Could have broken his bloody neck."
Then, to laughter,
"I'd love to have seen that."
Ronnie reached the barrier, slapped his Oyster card onto the scanner, and passed quickly through. As he boarded the escalator and began to descend, he saw ahead the cops were now at the bottom and running in the direction of the Piccadilly line. Ronnie stepped to the left of the escalator and began to hurry down as fast as he could. As he went, he noticed scuff marks, as if from slipping feet, on the sheet metal surface of the divide between the escalators. Were these the tracks of the nut job the staff had been talking about? And if so, had it been Dave, Damo, or one of their pursuers? When Ronnie got to the bottom, he ran around to the escalators that led deeper down to the Piccadilly line. Here, the crowds were thinner, and he was able to hurry down faster. But as he rounded the corner into the tunnel for the platforms, he saw a crowd was forming at the entrance to the eastbound Platform 4. Ronnie pushed through to the front of the throng, where he came up against the chest-high metal barrier that had been placed across the width of the tunnel. The blue-uniformed staff who were manning the barrier were already busy fielding the questions and demands of the passengers, and now one of them was raising his hands to draw the attention of the whole crowd.
"I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but there's been an incident on the platform. All eastbound services are temporarily suspended."
The replies were loud and numerous.
"What kind of accident?"
"Well, I've got to be it."
"Oh, this is bloody typical."
"For how long? Is there a bus service?"
Obviously, Dave and his mates were the incident, and this was where the cops had gone. But going by the looks of things, nobody else would be following them for some time. Ronnie turned around and made his way out of the now angry mob. When he emerged, it was into a stream of passengers flowing from his right. A glance at the signage told him they were coming from the exit passage to the same platform. So that route had to be wide open. Pressing himself to the wall, he made his way against the flow of people, many of whom were talking excitedly. But when he reached the exit passage, he found a second barrier, manned by staff intent on letting only departing passengers through. Still, since these guys weren't fending off an angry mob, they might be more inclined to share a few details.
Hey!
Ronnie said, interrupting a conversation between two of the staff.
What's going on?
Line's closed, sir, said one. You'll need to take an alternative route.
Yeah, but why? What's the story?
Some loonies run into the tunnel, said his colleague. No train's going nowhere till they've got him.
Is that the same bloke what ran down between the escalators?
The two men glanced at each other, silently acknowledging that Ronnie might be someone they shouldn't be talking to. Then the first guy said,
We couldn't comment on that, sir. You'll have to go back now.
Oh, come on, fellas, said Ronnie. Give a bloke a break. I'm press. Freelance. This is my bread and butter, this is.
Sorry, mate. Can't help you. Talk to the TFL press office. You know the number.
Yeah, don't I just. Thanks a bleeding bunch.
With a sour expression, Ronnie turned away and joined the now thinning flow of passengers from the platform, who, it immediately occurred to him, had all seen something of the incident beyond the barrier.
Excuse me,
he said, pulling out his dictaphone and latching himself onto a young couple in animated conversation.
I'm with the press. Could you tell me what's going on down there?
As they continued to walk, the man balked slightly at the recorder that Ronnie thrust out to his face, but replied,
Yeah, a couple of guys lying on the platform, not sure if they were dead or unconscious.
There were guns too, added the woman, lying on the ground near them.
Guns? Said Ronnie. What kind of guns?
The woman looked flummoxed.
Oh God, I don't know. What kind were they, Jack?
I don't know. Weird looking things, weren't they?
Ronnie tried to narrow it down a bit.
Pistols? Submachine guns?
Oh no, said Jack, suddenly confident. No, they weren't machine guns. More like pistols, yeah?
Like pistols?
Said Ronnie, frowning.
How do you mean?
Well, they looked kind of plastic. They had loads of wires coming out of them.
Tasers, thought Ronnie.
Were there any wires sticking out of the blokes lying on the platform?
Eh?
The man and woman chimed in harmony.
From their bodies, maybe their torsos or their legs.
What, you mean like a robot?
Said the woman with a guffaw. Ronnie suppressed an eye roll.
No, I mean...
He realised there was little point in trying to explain. Instead, he switched tack.
Was there any blood?
No, said Jack. Not that I could see.
Okay, and how many are these guns?
I saw two, said Jack. He looked at his companion questioningly. Lizzie?
Yeah, two, she confirmed. What paper are you with?
Whoever pays the most, said Ronnie. Was there anyone in custody?
What do you mean?
Anyone in handcuffs?
Oh, no, just people showing us out. Will it be in the mail?
Maybe, said Ronnie. What about the blokes on the platform? Can you describe them? Young, old, fat, thin?
Oh, blimey, I don't know, said Lizzie, looking to Jack for corroboration. 30s? 40s?
Yeah, said Jack. Not young, put it that way. One wore a suit. The other, I think he had a jacket and jumper, you know, with a roll neck.
Uh-huh, said Ronnie.
So it wasn't Dave or Damo. Sounded like their pursuers had had some kind of taser shootout.
That's great. Tell me, did you see anyone run into the train tunnel?
Blimey, no, said Lizzie. Why, did someone do that?
Ronnie turned to Jack.
You didn't hear nobody saying anything about anyone running into the tunnel?
Jack shook his head.
No. I bet it was the killer, wasn't it? Said Lizzie. He escaped into the tunnel.
Well, we don't know if there was a killer, said Jack. Maybe they aren't dead.
Yeah, because maybe they're a couple of robots,
Lizzie laughed. Ronnie knew he'd got all he was going to get out of them.
Okay, thanks. You've been a big help. What are your names?
After taking their names and assuring them he'd credit them, Ronnie spoke to another passenger with whom he rode back up the escalator. This guy didn't add anything new, but his descriptions of the men on the platform confirmed to Ronnie that neither of them were Dave or Damo. And as he returned to the ground floor of the station, he was wondering which of them had been the one to run into the tunnel. Suddenly, he was roused from his thoughts as the crowd before him began to part, making way for what he saw was a team of black-clad firearms officers. He pulled out his camera and managed to get a few shots of them as they ran past him in the direction of the escalators. Going down after the man in the tunnel, no doubt, he thought. But which one? Damo or Dave? The order of the chase suggested Damo would have got down there first. He could have caught a train, and then Dave would have come down to see that train leaving. And then the other two had run in and shot each other with tasers. Why? It didn't make sense. And why didn't Dave just exit the platform with the passengers from the newly arrived train? Whatever the reason, most likely it was Dave who had run into the tunnel. So where was he going? Damo would have been long gone if he'd caught a train. But if he hadn't, if Damo had also missed the train and had run into the tunnel, and if Dave had seen him do it but no one else had, then he would have gone after him. That made sense. The men lying on the platform didn't matter for now. What mattered was where Damo and Dave were going, assuming they hadn't stepped on the third rail and fried to death, or the cops hadn't caught up with them. He saw a tube map on the wall and traced the dark blue Piccadilly line east with his finger to Russell Square. The police could already be there. Most likely they were, but there was always a chance that they weren't. Ronnie smiled. A minute later, he was out in the street and hailing a taxi.
"Where to?"
asked the driver.
"Russell Square Station, and don't spare the horses."
And so, Ronnie goes off to Russell Square Station, hoping to find Damo and David. Though, as we know, he won't find them. And as we also know, David is currently in custody in the station he's leaving behind, the station that will soon be the scene of the sect's murderous extraction. Ronnie will kick himself when he learns he missed it, but we won't, because we'll be there next time in episode 37 of Underwood and Flinch, Underground. The music you're listening to is Ahmad Arma by Farid Farjad, courtesy of Taraneh Records and our good friend Fawaz Al-Maloud. So there it was, ladies and gentlemen, short but sweet. I'll be back with you next week with the final episode of Yule Among the Sleepless, and then my next podcast will be the next, satisfyingly normal length, episode of Underground. Before I go, I'd just like to thank you all for supporting me in the writing of this story. It's not easy writing something this complex, and it is complex, I can tell you. You may not appreciate that yet, but when the last book in the saga comes to its close, you'll look back and say, "Blimey, that really was devilishly complex, and yet so easy to understand." The reason for that, my friends, is down to you. If not for you, this saga would have ended halfway through Blood and Smoke, and this book would never even have existed. You make it all happen. And one day, when Underwood and Flinch is the global smash of Netflix and everyone's talking about it, you'll be able to say, "You know the reason you're enjoying that, hmm? Me. Yes, I made that happen." And your friends will be awed and amazed. You think it's wishful thinking on my part, perhaps, but I don't. I know it. I have no idea when or how, but I sincerely believe that one day it will happen. Maybe I'll be dead, long dead, but one day, yes, it will happen. And so, I thank you again, not just for me, but for all those people who will one day be thanking you too, but right now have no idea just how awesome you are. Huzzah!
Huzzah!
Yes, too right. And so, on that note, thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen, but from me for now, it's farewell.